Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
We've spent a lot of time on Free Talk Live talking about Ross. We've interviewed his mother, Lynn Ulbricht, who was one of the speakers at the Porcupine Freedom Festival. The auction that I mentioned brought in over $10,000 in 2 hours' time. So it was a pretty big deal, I think. I mean, I don't know what auctions tend to bring in, but $10,000 seemed to be really good for what was a relatively small, you know, auction in the middle of the woods in New Hampshire. I thought $10,000 was really, really good.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
So, and you know, not the whole campground wasn't at the auction. As you pointed out, you only maybe stopped in a couple of times. So not everybody saw this auction. So it was really probably, you know, a fraction of the campground that even participated in it. But it was a good fraction. There was a good amount of people that came, and there was a historic auctioning of cannabis that actually happened at the very end, or alleged cannabis, at the end of the auction. And we'll talk more about that once the video of that auction is available. I haven't had a chance yet. I've been dealing with technical difficulties since getting back from the campground. But, Rich, what I came across today from Medium.com, and I don't know if you already saw this, Ross Ulbricht has written a blog post.
My thoughts on the FBI are not very high. I mean, before they started trying to frame Trump for the Russian collusion, you know, I watched FBI agent Phil Christiana of the Joint Terrorism Task Force perjure himself in a New Hampshire court. And the interesting thing is, he was supposed to be a terrorism expert, a bomb expert. Well, the day that he went to court to perjure himself in my trial was, as I recall, the day after the Boston Marathon bombing. Mm-hmm. So the FBI was so concerned about the American people that they needed to put a pot dealer away instead of worrying about the Boston Marathon bombing.
That's right. And that agent has been sniffing around the Free State Project for years beyond when he first came after you. He was trying to find out about Dave Ridley and some of the earliest Keen movers as far back as 2005, which was before I even moved here. So, I mean, they've had a high interest in the various things that have gone on here.
Yeah, the FBI basically exists to be a political goon squad, as far as I can tell.
So back to Ross, he says that it hurt having these lies told about him. He says that it's easier to condemn a villain, so it had to appear that I deserve this. This is a punishment, after all, and would be unfair otherwise. A sense of fairness is fundamental to our nature. It's part of the glue that keeps civilization together. He says, I don't claim that we don't need to keep some people separated from free society. As Solzhenitsyn famously wrote, quote, the battle line between good and evil runs through the heart of every man, unquote. Some are possessed by their dark side and can be expected to violently prey on the weak and vulnerable, like the government goons.
Yeah.
There are people like that in here, he says. That doesn't mean they deserve this or that they cannot change. It just means that humane separation is the only option until they do. But this is not humane. He says, many of my fellow prisoners have no support from the outside. Their loved ones have either died during their long stay here, abandoned them, or turned on them. All of us are cut off to some degree. We seek, even for, by the way, for those who actually want to continue visiting their loved one in prison, it is an incredibly arduous process. It's not just like you can just show up one day and waltz right in and see the person you care about. No, there's usually some sort of an approval process in advance where you have to apply in order to, and again, it's different by different states. I don't know what the federal approval process is, but like here in New Hampshire, if you want to go and see somebody at the New Hampshire State Prison, you got to apply first and be approved as a approved visitor.
The Japanese, back in the day, when someone committed honorable seppuku, there would be a second who stood behind him, and if he didn't, you know, by the time he was at the point where he couldn't cut anymore, the second would take his head off, which was the coup de grace. now that, although that's French, so I don't know how they came up with that, but maybe they just translated. Anyway, the
Seppuku, by the way, isn't that where you're cutting your own like belly open and spilling your guts out?
Yeah, seppuku's you know, not for the faint of heart. Yeah. I would probably go with some sort of an opiate if I was gonna do that. But
wasn't it like the Yojimbo or whatever, the samurais who were, you know, who would do that in some sort of shame?
Yeah, well, the samurai would do that as atonement for a major failure. Mm. They would sometimes, losing a battle, the commander would commit seppuku if he had, especially if it was his error which bought the which lost the battle specifically.
So back to Ross Ulbricht in his prison cell. He says that he believes this is not humane. He says prisoners there don't have support. Many of their loved ones are dead, or they have rejected them and or turned on them. He says all of us are cut off to some degree. We seek mental escapes of every kind, some constructive, others destructive, to stave off confronting the abject horror of our situation. For those that are on the outside of the prison system, you don't know anybody who is in it, which there are fewer and fewer people in America these days that actually don't know a prisoner, or at least somebody who spent some sort of time behind bars, simply because things like the war on drugs and other nonviolent, victimless so-called crimes have put such a large portion of the American population behind bars at some point in their life.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. We've gone from the so-called land of the free, which was only true within limited parameters ever, because obviously right. minorities were never free. But at least for white people at one time, we were the land of the free. And instead of making America great for everybody, it sounds like we're moving to a situation where everybody is more or less a slave, or at least living like a sinner in the hands of an angry God, as Jonathan Edwards put it, mm-hmm. just waiting to be dropped into the prison system.
Right. And of course, once you're in the prison system, then you're a real slave at that point, because if you don't do what you're told, you go to solitary, and that's basically torture. So you'll do what you're told.
Yeah. And not just that, even if you do get out, you're no longer considered a full human. You know,
right.
you're
a felon now.
Yeah, you're no longer considered to have the right to keep and bear arms, the right to defend yourself.
Mark, who's our co-host on some of the nights on this show, he wasn't even allowed to go to Japan. He couldn't right. even get into the country.
Up to this point, you know, in life, they didn't have this big computer in the sky that was going to tell them one thing or the other. So I'm just not going to tell them the information they want to know. Right. Have you ever been convicted of felony? No.
Okay.
So I just
Oops,
say no.
I forgot that one.
Well, that's what I do. I'm sorry. You know, I was sentenced as a youthful offender. I've got, just because these people ask a question doesn't mean they deserve a honest answer. Do you? Hey, boy, you got any slaves in your barn? No, I don't. Is the answer. I don't keep runaway slaves in the barn.
Oh, okay. You were talking right? about runaway slaves. I was thinking, wait a minute, you're lying to a guy enforcing anti-slavery laws? But no, you were talking about a guy enforcing
right.
pro-slavery
well, this is
laws.
Quite, sorry, imaginary. This is quite literally a problem the Quakers dealt with as they were part of the Underground Railroad trying to get escaped slaves to freedom is that they had to deal. These were people who were fastidiously honest, and yeah. then a slaver would come along and say, hey, did such and such happen? And they would have to determine whether or not they wanted to tell the truth. And
right.
many of them came to the conclusion that lying was the greater truth. And others came to the conclusion that they must tell the truth because they have been asked. And that's just how some people are. My answer is, no, I don't have to tell you. Just because you asked doesn't mean I have to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And I was sentenced as a youthful offender, which means that I can keep that information to myself if I wish.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
Ah, okay.
He points out that violence is common in prison, and the tension it brings is the air we breathe. Forcing someone to spend years or decades continuously like this, waking up to it every single morning, is cruel. If you disagree, he says, I'll prove it to you. Imagine the worst torture you can think of that doesn't leave the victim disabled. Something you can't deny is cruel. Burning, flogging, take your pick. If the victims themselves would prefer this torture to imprisonment, the inescapable conclusion is that prison is worse, even more cruel. I and every prisoner I have asked would prefer any amount of pain and cruelty for a limited duration to the years and decades we're forced to spend here. Spirits crushed, hope abandoned, relegated to irrelevance. No one deserves this, he says. Even if they have to here for the sake of others' safety, or even if, I think he left out a word, even if they have to be here for the sake of others' safety. Certainly, the many nonviolent drug offenders growing old in here do not deserve this. Pain does not heal pain. A lost soul is not redeemed in a cage. Vengeance and cruelty are not aspects of our nature to be honored and institutionalized. They're base and destructive. For all the draconian punishments that we've seen dealt out in things like the war on drugs or in other areas of so-called criminal behavior, you know, whether it's prostitution or you name it, whatever the punishments have been, haven't stopped people from doing those things.
Yeah, I mean, and it transforms what is arguably a vice into a crime, you know? And the problem with that is all of a sudden, once you turn a vice into a crime, you create victims.
The victim of the person who has the vice by the government. The government
exactly,
victimizing them.
Exactly. They criminalize, and you know, their own law should forbid this. The Ninth Amendment says that the enumeration of in this Constitution of certain rights shall not be held to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And, you know, that means a couple of things. The first is our rights don't come from the Constitution.
It's an important distinction.
Exactly. We retain those rights. And the other thing is that we do have basic rights that are not enumerated in the Constitution, and some of those are in the Declaration of Independence.
The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?
Exactly. Now, what are you doing when you get high? You're pursuing happiness. When you start dehumanizing large groups of people, that is the necessary condition to going to war with that group of people.
Well, it is a war on drugs, but the drugs don't care if they get confiscated and, you know, put in an incinerator.
They probably don't like us very much either. Anyway, we set them on fire.
Right, but the humans that are doing this, I mean, if the purported reason behind the war on drugs, Rich Paul, is to correct people and stop them from doing drugs, because the idea is that it's somehow wrong to do that, which is a whole other question. I would say it's not wrong to alter your state of consciousness at all. It's a natural human thing. But even from the perspective of people who look down their nose at the drug user, if the idea is to stop them from doing drugs, then they've failed. They've had a complete abject failure at that, because the idea is, looks like you're ruining your life with drug abuse. Now we're going to ruin your life by putting you inside a prison cell where there's no way you could possibly be a productive human being and make a better life for yourself or your family or whatever.
Yeah, and from the point of view of somebody who spent 22 years working with addicts, I mean, for one thing, there is absolutely nothing you can do that will reinforce somebody's drug addiction for them than cutting them off from people. The only people who benefit from this system are the industries that are protected by it. And make no mistake, this is protectionism. This is about taking away the competition to the poisonous drugs that are produced by Big Pharma. They don't want you smoking weed, because if you smoke weed, you're not going to be taking their Provigil and their tricyclic antidepressants. Whereas I would say I don't want you doing that, because all of the people, for example, who have engaged in school shootings have been on Big Pharma drugs. Big Pharma psychiatric drugs. They are way more dangerous than weed could ever dream of being.
And not to mention that we found that cannabis and CBD, for instance, which is one of the active chemicals in the cannabis plant, is incredibly helpful for so many different maladies. There are people who swear by this stuff. And finally, after however many decades, it's now available in many places to actually purchase. Mm-hmm. And of course, they have to constantly mention that you can't get high off of it, you know, because there's this mentality that the idea that altering your state of consciousness is somehow undesirable. Going on with Trump. In fact, I've got a Trump-related story coming up here as well regarding Venezuela. But, Rich, what's the story with him and 9/11?
Well, first off, the source is Zero Hedge, although I believe it's a reprint from The Independent, and it's under the byline Tyler Durden. Now,
which is a character from...
It is a character from Fight Club, but I believe that he is the reposter and not the original author, but just so you have an idea of the credibility. And the title is, Trump, I think I know who was behind the 9/11 attacks. President Trump says he knows who was behind the September 11th, 2011, 2001 attacks, telling ABC News' George Stephanopoulos, Iraq did not knock down the World Trade Center, adding that... It was other people, and I think I know who the other people were, and you might also.
Well, now that's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, here we are all these years after 9/11 has occurred, and, you know, there have been so many political changes in the United States government since then, like the Patriot Act, of course, mm-hmm. that have been blamed on, or 9/11 was used as the excuse to bring about even more government control, even more rules and restrictions and bureaucracy and the Department of Homeland Security, which never existed before and all that. And it's been predicated on the claim that the government was telling the truth.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
Trump segued from his 9/11 comments into a criticism of America's military intervention in the Middle East.
Really?
Calling it the worst decision made in the history of our country and described the region as like quicksand. It was a terrible decision to go into the Middle East.
And this is a recent interview.
Yes. This
isn't during the campaign. This is something that this article is dated recently. I think I looked at this.
Yeah, it's dated 6/17/2019.
Interesting.
By ZeroHedge.com, and they're not the first to pick up the story. So really, we should look at the Stephanopoulos interview, and I will watch that tonight. And try to get more data on it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Trump is going back to his claims that he's not a fan of the Middle Eastern interventionism, because he certainly hasn't really put a stop to it. So talk is cheap.
I think what happens is he keeps getting hustled mm-hmm. by his advisors, mm-hmm. where they'll be like, oh, we got to do this. We got to do this. We got to do this mm-hmm. right now. Don't, come on, people are going to die if we don't do what we say, and blah, 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 blah. And my guess is that that's what's been happening. And one of the things that indicates that to me is that he ordered and then canceled mm-hmm. a strike in response to an Iranian attack, an alleged Iranian attack on one of our drones. I do believe that he's evolving, and I hope that he's evolving along the same lines that Ronald Reagan evolved along on this issue. There were a lot of things Reagan was terrible about, but sent the Marines in, and they had the barracks bombing in Lebanon, Reagan just pulled the troops out. He was like, and he said to, I believe, to Ron Paul, because of course they knew each other, he said, I didn't realize going in how irrational that part of the world is. Mm. And basically conceded that there was no good that we could do there. And that's the thing, is we're dealing with people where I keep using the we because that's traditional.
Well,
but
at least you're aware, you're becoming aware of it. And that's that's the first step to stopping it.
Yeah. Well, I used to consciously do that mm-hmm. so that when I was arguing with with statists, I would generally use the traditional minarchist language just so I didn't have to go in and explain it to them.
I don't think it takes too long to explain, and it does a good job of sort of breaking up what's expected and maybe make people look at something from an alternative perspective of, oh, yeah, that's them. That's not us.
I've listened intermittently over the years, and to be honest, I haven't listened in a while. It's great to hear you guys again. Whatever happened to that situation where the Fed seized all your computers and stuff? How did that all work out? And what do you think of that? Don't you think that's kind of, obviously, I believe you were set up, kind of like what they just recently did to Alex Jones. What all happened
and
with
Julian
that?
Assange?
Nothing has happened. The federal government raided the studios here back in just 2016. It was March, I think, of 2016, so over 3 years ago. They seized over 50 pieces of storage devices and such, so hard drives and flash drives and, you know, you name it, phones, laptops. They seized those things, and it's the last we heard of them, basically, since then. So that's that. No charges.
Have you considered taking action against them legally, like suing them?
No, it's really not worth doing because then you have to pay attorneys to go after them. And then by that time, you know, by the time you're done filing, you've already exceeded the cost of whatever the equipment was that they stole. So it's basically pointless.
Well, the thing that you would gain from that, let me take the devil's advocate side here, or the attorney's advocate side, which is pretty much the same thing. But the thing that you would gain is vindication, okay? Because as long as they've got that stuff, it's still you're under investigation, right, and they just haven't found the evidence yet.
You know, Trump, as you pointed out in the last hour, Rich, just recently aborted mission on a potential bombing raid that could have killed people, and that was a big deal.
Yeah, it's very interesting. He apparently ordered the strike, and then before the strike was sent out, the strike was because Iran was accused of shooting down a drone. And of course, this is not a $300 drone like we buy at the hobby shop. This is a multi-million dollar device, knowing the U.S. military. Yeah. So it wasn't trivial, but nonetheless, after ordering the attack and before the attack went out, he went back to his advisors and he said, how many people is this going to kill? And they said about 150, and he said, don't do it. And wow.
Yeah.
That's
shocking.
When's the last time an American president asked how many people is this going to kill and actually cared about the answer?
It's crazy. I mean, it's almost unbelievable that something like that could happen, but apparently it did.
It is. And there's something else that plays into this, which is there's one candidate on the Democratic side who's anti-war, Tulsi Gabbard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing to come out of the Democratic debate last night is she was runaway picked as the crowd's favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Spokesperson Sarah Sanders for Trump said a letter was sent by President Trump and correspondence between the two leaders has been ongoing, she said. Earlier this month, Mr. Trump said a, quote, beautiful, unquote, letter had been sent to him by Kim Jong-un. So Trump responded. It was not disclosed when or how Trump's letter to Kim had been delivered. Talks between the U.S. and North Korea did stall at the meeting in Vietnam earlier this year in February between Trump and Kim. The letter is the first major development between the countries since then, says the BBC's Laura Bicker from Seoul. The U.S. has insisted North Korea give up its nuclear program while Pyongyang has demanded relief on their sanctions that have been placed upon the country by the U.S. government and others. However, in recent months, Trump has spoken warmly about Kim. Earlier in the month, he told reporters that North Korea under Kim's leadership had, quote, tremendous potential, unquote. And in May, during a visit to Japan, Trump described Kim as, quote, a very smart guy and said he expected, quote, a lot of good things to come out of North Korea. And, you know, this is an interesting thing to watch, I have to say. As somebody who has spent a number of years on this show, kind of the best we can, paying some level of attention to North Korea. We don't live there, so obviously we don't know what it's really like. All we know is what the people who've escaped from that place say about it and what the state media says about it.
Earlier you had said that you were talking about how Trump supposedly called back the strike on Iran.
That's the story, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a lie.
Really?
Any yeah, oh yeah. Any operation that, you know, someone had to put this thing together,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, the president gets briefed. He gets told way before he ever commits to pulling off any kind of a strike. Someone's going to give him what their estimation is about who's going to die and what's going to happen. Trump knew all this stuff before he even said, let's do it. So him coming on and saying that he decided to pull it back after it was already in the air, when he found out that 150 people were going to get killed, crap.
So you're saying he's making this up to make himself sound better?
Yes.
And,
okay. Oh, yes.
Do you have any source on that information, or is that just your masculine inner intuition?
No, that's how every military operation ever gets started.
New York is one of the most heavily taxed, heavily regulated places in the United States. It is the 50th least free state, and it is much less free than even compared to California, which is by no means a free place. But New York scores way lower on the Freedom in the 50 States study than any other state, and it's way lower than even number 49, which is California. So, yeah, you basically live in the least free of all of the 50 states by far.
Yeah.
Like, hands down.
I'm thinking of going back to Russia almost, you know, because
really?
over here, although Russia, the freedom is not as good also, but, you know, not as much taxes. You have free medical services, you have... You know, there's no taxes. Whatever you make, you keep, basically. So
that can't be. I mean, how's the Russian government funding their operations?
Well, not
no
everything, but for the most part. You know, there's ways around it over here.
I mean, do they have property tax? What's the main mechanism? Is there a sales tax in Russia?
They charge like tax based on like your income. They do look at that. There's an income tax.
So there is an income tax.
It's not like high over here. If you want to own a business, I was just with a guy the other day. 37% he pays
in New York
to the government.
37% to the state? To the state government?
No, to the federal government.
To the federal, because there's also state and city taxes in New York City. There's state taxes and city taxes.
Yeah, plus that, right.
My whole thing is just with the self-defense, like other things that can help with self-defense, like being in New York, you're not allowed to buy, like, a stun gun. You're not allowed to buy pepper spray a lot of places. Like, you can't even buy them online and have them shipped to New York.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and I just, I think that should be, like, focused on along with the guns and everything.
Oh, I agree totally. Look, the right to bear arms doesn't have to do with, you know, just guns. It has to do with anything that can help you even the odds in an attack against you, whether it's an attack against you by a government goon squad or it's an attack against you by a private criminal. Having the ability to use a weapon, and obviously some people are trained to use their bodies as weapons, but that's another matter entirely. But having the ability to grab a thing and have a better chance at surviving the encounter is basically, you know, one of the reasons that amendment exists.
Yeah, I've studied.
Yeah, I just. Oh, go ahead.
I've studied martial arts, and that's one of the great things about that is they can never take that away from you, even in prison.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.